Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, live in beautiful Miami. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we are on iHeartRadio, we are on Fox Sports Radio, and we are on FS1. We have a star-studded show today. We thank you so much for joining us. There are a lot of choices out there. Joy Taylor is joining me. Her brother, the Hall of Famer Jason Taylor, will be joining us on the show today. I'm going to pepper him with questions about Joy's childhood, so get ready for it.
Very excited for that. It is much brighter and warmer than it was yesterday. Oh. It was a little cold, a little overcast.
Oh.
We are in full Miami swing now here on South Beach.
By the way, there are a lot of amazing cities. I do apologize for the rest of the American cities, but let's just hold all the Super Bowls here.
Yes.
Last night went to an Argentinian steakhouse in Miami. They were doing music. I'm not sure I slept. It was just, I have left my own persona in Los Angeles.
I mean, look at this place. It's paradise.
Let's start with this. I'm reading a story. We have, perhaps many believe, the best football player in America in the Super Bowl, Patrick Mahomes. It's a remarkable story. Yesterday, we talked about the similarities with Kobe Bryant. Not drafted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Drafted 10. Overlooked. Dad played pro sports. Falls into really good coaching as he enters the NBA or NFL. And they were asked very early, Patrick Mahomes now, carry, be the face of the franchise, and I think he can do it. But I want to talk about Jimmy Garoppolo. One of my favorite things about sports is finding the gem before we all know it's obvious. A couple days ago, I saw on the internet, Derek Jeter, the scouting report in high school, the scout for the Yankees in high school, talked about Derek Jeter. And he's like five-tool star. And I was like, if this was up for auction, I would buy it. It's fascinating. I remember having a high school conversation in a prelude of my best friend, Jack Jones, in high school in 1983. And I told him about this band from Ireland. They were called U2. He didn't like them. And I told him in 1983, they've got one album. They're going to be amazing. I love stuff like that. I think it's cool to find something that becomes great before everybody knows it's great. Isn't that what everybody's trying to do with the stock market? Find the stock before it becomes Amazon or Microsoft. Jimmy Garoppolo. One of the things I like about the NFL is about winning. The NBA can be about style. Baseball's about stats. Other sports are about many things. Football's about winning. Jimmy G went 2-0 in New England, then 5-0 in San Francisco, 2017. He's now 23-5 as a starter. I do apologize if he's not on the House of Highlights on Instagram or he is not as productive for your fantasy team. But this is the thing about the NFL. And this is one of my favorite parts of sports. My entire life, and I think Joy does this a lot too, I'm trying to give you insight that other shows don't give you. There's a million radio shows and a million talented hosts, men and women doing what I'm doing, men and women. But I'm always on the phone trying to get information, trying to find it just a second sooner so you feel like you're kind of part of a club that has information. And in the process of doing that, I've always had a basic rule. Find people who are smarter than me in some particular field, listen to them, and if they work as hard as me, and as they're as diligent as I think I am, then trust them. So for those of you doubting Jimmy Garoppolo, ask yourself this. Do you think Bill Belichick knows more about football than you? Do you think Kyle Shanahan knows more about football than you? Bill Belichick was going to replace Tom Brady with Jimmy Garoppolo, who was 2-0 as a starter. And Kyle Shanahan paid him $27 million dollars a year. Actually, the first year cap hit was $35 million. and he had five starts. So ask yourself, there's a reason a scout could predict Derek Jeter. There's a reason music critics talked about the Beatles before they were the Beatles. Do you think Belichick and Kyle Shanahan know more football than you? They certainly know more than me. Think about how willing to commit to Jimmy Garoppolo before the rest of us. And that's when I went all in on Jimmy G. I'm like, Belichick's going to replace Brady? Kyle's going to pay him $27 million a year? I'm all in on this guy. By the way, I'm not a big stat guy, but there are stats that matter. And Jimmy Garoppolo is never going to be a stat monster. The receiving core is young. George Kittle is good, but often hurt. They're a run-first offense that wants to eat the clock. We saw that against Green Bay. They didn't ask Jimmy G to throw a lot. So with Garoppolo, there will be numbers I will monitor, and they will not be touchdown passes. They will not be yards. They will be wins, and they will be fourth quarter football. This year in the NFL, Jimmy Garoppolo's passer rating when trailing was 117. Aaron Rodgers was in the 80s. That matters. That's a stat. Trailing, late, time running down, pressure on. You can't rely on that big running game behind you. You gotta make throws. Jimmy G, trailing passer rating this year, 117. I'd say it's pretty good. Aaron Rodgers, first ballot Hall of Famer, shy of 90. Just shy, but just shy. And remember this. We have revisionist history on stuff. In Tom Brady's first six Super Bowls, 6-0, his best Super Bowl was his sixth. But if you look at Tom Brady, and this is what football's about winning, his best Super Bowl statistically was Philadelphia. He lost. His worst were the Rams. He won. Which one do you think he preferred? But if you go back to Brady's first six Super Bowls, or first six playoff games, Brady's first six playoff games, never forget this. If you think Kyle Shanahan is the one winning for Jimmy G or the running game, first six playoff games for Brady, he had a passer rating over 100 one time. Going back to my initial point, the scout who saw Jeter, and the time I tried to tell my friend Jack that you two was going to be great in 1983, you have to trust people. You have to trust people who you think maybe know a little bit more. And Shanahan paid him 27 large, and Bill was going to replace Brady with a kid from Eastern Illinois drafted in the second round. That is why I like San Francisco Sunday, and why I think Jimmy G, not Mahomes, could end up being the MVP. Let me shift to this. Two players have mostly dominated in the last 20 years, have dominated this Super Bowl. Joe Montana with 4, Tom Brady with 6. 10 rings between the two of them in the last 20, 25, 30 years. Yesterday, Montana came out and said, Tom, don't leave. I've done it. Don't leave, stay in New England. And I was thinking about, you know how like when you're young, your parents give you advice, or you hear like cliches and, you know, sayings and truisms, and a lot of them are just like ridiculous cliches. But there is one, because I've moved a lot in my life, and this is one I always think about. Grass is always greener, right? If you're in a personal relationship or a professional relationship. Now, I've moved a lot, but I've moved generally for a series of events that I felt I either had to get out of or opportunities I had to get into. So just remember this with Tom Brady. He has the best coach in the league, the best offensive line coach in the league, and arguably the best offensive coordinator. They get their Pro Bowl kicker back. Their defense is top 5. If you're going to leave a company, in my life, there's 2 to 3 things I've always asked. Do I trust the management going forward? Can I get a significant financial opportunity? Can I live in a better place? or is there currently chaos where I'm at? New England needs a tight end and one more receiver. That is not chaos. That is not mayhem. You look around this league, there's only five rosters I definitively feel that are better than Tom Brady's current roster. I think Baltimore's is better. San Francisco's is better. I think Minnesota's is better. I think the Chiefs is better. New Orleans is better. That's it. And then New England is swimming in that Dallas, Pittsburgh, Rams, Packers, B-plus almost everywhere. Grass is greener. If you really, truly look at the needs of New England for Tom Brady, it is a tight end and one more receiver who runs well. That does not rise to organizational chaos.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I want to talk for a second about LeBron James. What happened to the Lakers? They canceled an NBA game tonight, Lakers-Clippers. The NBA rightly did so. I think it was too much to ask many young players who idolize Kobe. And however we're connected to each other, whether it's a physical, emotional relationship, idolizing through music and sports, that's okay. There's no reason to apologize for it. So LeBron said yesterday, it's now my responsibility to carry this franchise through these tough times. It is easy to say that. He had a beautiful Instagram post yesterday, did LeBron. There is the pressure of being LeBron. There is the pressure of being LeBron as a Laker. And now there is the pressure of being LeBron as a Laker and carrying a franchise through a devastating loss. Folks, in my life covering the NBA, I've seen really good teams unravel because of a rumor at the trade deadline. If this season for the Lakers was never the same, it would be absolutely and completely understandable. This is the thing about the NBA that people may not know. Chris Broussard touched on it yesterday. The best player in the league, or the second best, becomes a huge brand. He makes more than any other athlete generally in the world outside of an occasional international soccer star. There's a certain territory to being Michael Jordan and to being Kobe and to being LeBron and to being KD and to being Steph. And those players are protective with their territory, as they should. LeBron James was very close to Dwayne Wade, but he left Miami and didn't give him a heads up, and Dwayne Wade understood. KD did not call Steph Curry before he left Golden State. Both KD and Steph understood. Larry Bird and Magic were rare. They were close as they aged, even while competing against one another. But generally, there's a territory that you have as the top player brand and kind of personal company in the league. And I respect that. LeBron and Kobe were not tight. They had a growing relationship, which was really cool to watch. But as I've said, I've seen NBA teams unravel with significantly less than the death of a beloved star. But I think LeBron is uniquely built for this. And let me speak as a parent briefly. All parents want to provide a better life for their kids, a better life than they had. It's just very parental. That's not a criticism. I do it every day. My mom did it to me. She grew up in England, tough life. I do it to my kids. But the struggle and the hardships, well, there's an advantage to them. LeBron James will be able to do this because LeBron James' life has not been easy. Oh, the last 15 years have. But LeBron at 8, 9, and 10 years old was asked to carry his family. At 14, carry his high school team. At 20, to carry a historically irrelevant NBA franchise. At 28, to carry teammates in Miami. And most of his young life to carry the NBA. He's a virtual walking logo. And in every instance, every single instance, LeBron James has put his head down, put the work in, and burrowed through and won. I'm not sure any NBA player could do what LeBron is saying he will. carry the Lakers through this daunting emotional experience. I think he can do it, and he may be the only one, the only professional athlete with the strength to do it, because he's had to do it since he was about 7 and 8 years old.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Let's bring on a dear friend, 8-time Pro Bowler, a Hall of Famer, and on the Fox football show on Sundays that has been number one since the day he arrived. Howie Long, come on.
Oh, thank you.
It is happy birthday to Dave Coello, our guest booker. You can go to that one over there. There's a little towel for you because it's
Mike Vick said it's about $1.20 out here.
And it was.
And Mike Vick's about 180 pounds, and I'm about 100 more than that. So
you look great, by the way.
I should sweat a little bit.
So you forget the Super Bowls you've just been in. You have been, I think one of the storylines here is, I was talking to somebody who's been in several Super Bowls last night at dinner, and they said, Mike Shanahan wants to make sure that Kyle Shanahan gets the credit. But don't kid yourself, Mike's influence, he's watching practice every day, is in this Super Bowl. You have been the dad,
yeah,
and you have had the son in a Super Bowl. Let's talk about Chris. Do you have any influence on that?
You know, I'd like to think, listen, when both, we have two sons that played, Kyle and Chris, and each week I would, as if I were playing in a game, because when your upcoming game, you watch the three previous games of the opponent. And this is probably more for me. I don't know what they did with the notes, but I would send them the longest text with, you know, if 97 jab steps inside, he's doing this, you know, because one of the points that I think Kyle Shanahan made, you know, in getting advice from his dad was no defense, get to know defense. And I think he spent in all of his stops, he spent a lot of time in rooms with the defensive coaches, wanting to know how they react to things and trying to manipulate that through pre-snap motion, formation changes, the run game, etc. But with Chris was drafted by the Rams.
Yep.
Played 8 years in St. Louis. And it's the old, you have 40-plus sacks in St. Louis in 4 years, and if a tree falls in the woods and there's no one there to hear it, does it make a sound? And, you know, so now you have an opportunity after a couple of injury-plagued years where you're free and you have a choice to go wherever you want to go. Now he's, you know, obviously I think he leaned on me a little bit.
Sure.
I mean, Chris is someone who makes his own decisions and very informed decisions. And it was Atlanta, it was New England, it was Detroit, it was Dallas, and I kept going back to who's been in the last X number of AFC championship games? Who's been in the last X number of Super Bowl games? And it all pointed back to New England. So subconsciously, I was pushing him towards New England. And ironically enough, we were doing that game that year in Houston. And we did the first 2 hours, I think, at a park downtown in Houston. And I was fine. It didn't hit me. And, you know, been with this game between playing and broadcasting almost 40 years. It'll be 40 next year. I walked into that stadium, and it hit me like the humidity getting off the plane here in Miami. The nerves. My son's playing in the Super Bowl, and it just got so big. I don't remember much of what I said once we got inside the stadium, but I had pushed him towards New England to the point where he liked Atlanta. He liked the head coach. I liked the head coach. He was on his way down to Dallas, going to Richmond Airport in Virginia, and he gets a call from Bill Belichick. And, you know, when Bill calls,
sure,
you're done.
When he calls me every time, I'm
no,
done.
No, but when he calls, you're done. I mean, he's making the decision for you.
Right.
He ends up going to New England, and I felt like partially because I had pushed him there, and now we're in the third quarter.
Oh, boy.
It's 28-3.
Yeah.
And I'm the worst dad in the world. The only thing I could possibly help him with is football.
Right.
And I've screwed it up.
Right.
And the historical comeback is on, and, you know, Kyle Shanahan was a part of that.
Yeah. You've been in the NFL so long, not only as a player, but as a broadcaster and a trusted broadcaster. The Mike and Kyle Shanahan relationship's really cool.
It is.
And I said this the other day, Howie Long joining us, for those on our radio side, Hall of Famer, 8 Pro Bowls. I said, dads want their sons to get credit, and it can be sometimes tough for sons. I think it's cool that Kyle, uses a lot of his dad's methods and tools.
No question.
But I think Mike wants Kyle to get the credit for it. But I watch Kyle's offense, and I see his dad.
Look, I played under Mike, and, you know, listen, it wasn't that his tenure with the Raiders was not good, and I think we probably both could have handled it better. That being said, speaking as a dad, and that relationship he has with his son is obviously special. And obviously Mike's philosophy of how to beat a football team and how to prepare a football team has resonated with him because he's taken on a lot of that. But with the pre-snap motions and the shifts and all that, he's taken it to, I think, a different level.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, I haven't spoken to Mike about this, but Mike would be thrilled to death for Kyle to get all the credit.
Yeah.
Because when Chris is on that set in a post game down in Houston and they've just won the Super Bowl and eating those cheeseburgers at 5:30 in the morning in the lobby, I'm not someone who's genuinely optimistic. I'm Irish. So, I mean, we're a little bit of a hot mess.
You know,
when's the next controversy? When's the next shoe going to drop?
I'm going to tell my wife that.
But sitting in that lobby at 5:30 in the morning, eating that cheeseburger with our three sons and nobody else around, Troy Aikman was hovering around and was as close to nirvana as you can get to give you a Northwest kind of
Aberdeen, Washington. Weatherwax,
so I'm sure
High School.
For Mike Shanahan to watch Kyle not only have the success that he's had this year, but in previous years, because, you know, he's worked his way up, he's earned it. And having a famous dad is a burden.
Yep.
And it's something that I hadn't really anticipated.
Yeah. So this Super Bowl now is glorious. I look at our set. I can remember when I came to my first Super Bowl, we were on something called Radio Row, and it was just tables and headsets. I am now
Sodom and Gomorrah.
This is Battlestar Galactica, like on HGH.
I'd rather fight five guys than go to Radio Row. Am I right?
Makes two of us.
Taking my odds better than yours.
But you have been in Super Bowls when it was not this glam fest. Let's go back to your first Super Bowl and the simplicity of the preparation the day in the game.
Well, it was Super Bowl 18. We had played Washington earlier in the year up in Washington, lost a close game, backed up, second long screen pass to Joe Washington.
We're showing it right here.
He breaks the play. This is Riggins. I believe that's on fourth down. I'm not sure. I think that was on fourth down. But
oh, there's Howie.
Yeah.
Get him, Howie.
Here's the thing. Lyle and I had always taken a cab to the game. Lyle Alzado.
Yeah.
And that was our way of doing things. We wanted to get there early. Lyle would get dressed. He'd get on the floor. He'd fall asleep. I'd go over every conceivable play sheet that I could go over. And that was Lyle and me. He'd tell me when we're in dot formation. That's all he wanted to know. And so why should this game be any different? Now, today, with the streets blocked and snipers and security and you name it, the buses leave now and the streets are closed down. Lyle and I got in a cab in Tampa, Florida, and went to the game because we went to every other game in a cab on game day. We get stuck 3/4 of a mile from the stadium, and the poor driver speaks in broken English. He was trying to get us through, and Lyle wanted to go up on the curb. We end up walking the last 3/4 of a mile through the crowd to get to Super Bowl 18. And Lyle, as you can imagine, is angry. Which probably was a good thing leading into the game.
You were Howie Long and Lyle Alzado.
Yep.
Is it the causeway in Tampa? What are you walking on Dale Mabry Street to the stadium?
You know what? I wasn't looking at the streets. My head was on a swivel in the crowd because you never know who you're going to run into.
Howie Long, the Hall of Famer, is joining us. We are in beautiful Miami. We were talking about Mahomes earlier, and you said the dad can be a burden, but I was talking yesterday in a very somber tone about Kobe and Patrick Mahomes, that they were asked very early. Patrick now is sort of asked to be the face of the league, as Kobe was. Kobe made an all-star team before he was a starter.
Yeah.
Most of our icons, we let them move into their icon stature. Kobe were like, listen, you're just like Michael, be an all-star. But I don't start. It's a burden. But I do think Kobe had a dad who was a pro, Patrick Mahomes, your kids. To see the life before you live the life,
yeah,
it helps. When I look at Patrick Mahomes, there is a, he's fun but serious,
yep,
a kid but a grown-up,
yeah,
an ad-libber but can play within a sophisticated structure. He feels like Zion to me. I like the temperament. Does he remind you of anybody, though?
He reminds me physically of Elway. Having spent most of my adult life at a ski resort chasing him around was not a great, you know, a great deal of fun. But the thing that makes this kid special, I think we're throwing the ball more now at every level of football.
Yes.
Middle school, Pop Warner, high school, it's all spread. It's all off a wristband, et cetera. People are specializing in one sport. These kids who are playing quarterback, they're going to 7-on-7 camps. They're going to, you know, showcase camps. It's all year. They're lifting. They're at academies. This is a guy who got 3 scholarship offers, I believe, coming out of high school. One of the reasons why people thought he was a baseball prospect.
Yeah, Trent Dilfer told me yesterday that he was a baseball guy.
But he played 3 sports. And I think the great part of that is you see elements of all 3 sports in his game. He's a point guard as a quarterback, particularly when he extends plays, going to his right, going to his left, and redistributing kind of the offense. And it's the rerouting of their wide receivers. And they know the trick. They know the game. And you're going to have to hold coverage for 6-7 seconds, which is an eternity. And the pass rush wears down as the game goes on. His ability to act as a point guard and make the off-platform throws like a Russell Wilson, like the kid in Arizona, middle infielders who are used to dropping the arm down and making the throw.
Great point.
Yeah, and when everything breaks down, the guys in that have been to those camps and the 7-on-7s and it's all structured, sometimes it's chaos, and that's when this guy scares you most. That's
one of the smartest things anybody said on our show, that the baseball guys, it's a different sensibility. Urban Meyer believes—
Look how quickly these guys get down. Look how quickly he gets down.
Aaron
Look how quickly
Rodgers,
Russell gets down.
Aaron Rodgers is about the only guy that slides that wasn't a baseball player that I'm comfortable with. Dak.
Mike Vick. Mike Vick is one of the greatest athletes I've ever seen in my life.
Can't slide.
Could slide.
Lamar Jackson.
I'm like, wait a second. You can't slide?
Of course, but it's interesting because what you're basically saying is when you go to these camps, you know, we're talking about this with LeBron James. All parents want to make our kids' lives smoother and better than ours. But there is value in the struggle. And that LeBron had to take control of his family at young ages and franchises. He is really built. He is built to get through tough times. So if you go look at the history of the NFL quarterbacks, it's remarkable how many have transferred. Troy Aikman transferred.
Yeah.
And it's remarkable.
People forget that.
People forget how many were overlooked. Dropped Marino, Aaron Rodgers. And I think to your point, a lot of these kids that are star quarterbacks either played 2 sports, maybe have been better at the other one. They dropped in the draft.
And how does this guy drop in the draft? With the combines and the Senior Bowl and the East-West Shrine Game and, you know, the 42 workouts you do on campus. How does this guy drop in the draft? To Andy Reid's lap. And if this guy wins this Super Bowl, he's taking the league over.
You know, we asked this question yesterday. In basketball, talent is obvious at 15. But in football, half this league is undrafted.
Well, you know, I think that's the case with big guys. I'll give you an example. Buckner and Armstead both played at Oregon with Kyle. Have you walked up on Buckner and Armstead?
Oh, they're huge.
They are huge. I mean, huge. And it was all part of that. John Lynch and Shanahan are sitting there after 2 years of subpar football. Your quarterback that you paid all that money for has an ACL. It drops you down in the draft. It allows you the luxury of drafting Bosa, one, who is, as advertised, built like a midget wrestler.
Yeah.
He's just, when you walk on the field, your eyes are drawn to certain people. It was Samuel. I was amazed at how physical, how thick he was as a wide receiver. He's essentially a running back,
yeah,
playing wide receiver. And Bosa was, he's built for impact. He's built for leverage. And Buckner was ahead of Armstead. I think, you know, particularly with big players, they evolve later sometimes.
Yeah.
And Armstead, it kind of clicked this year.
It did. Because I was never a fan of his, and it clicked this year.
And here's what you can do versus what bothers Patrick Mahomes. It's not pressure, because when you bring pressure, he's great versus the blitz. It's can you rush with four? Can you play coverage? San Francisco can rush with four and play coverage.
Yep, seven back.
And when they had the injuries in the middle of the season, particularly the defensive front, it screwed their rotation up, and your defensive line wears down. They get D Ford back. They get Bosa. They've got the front four back, and they just light you up.
Look at Howie's not even sweating. You are just – you have cool aged.
Mike prepared me.
He really did.
Mike said, hey, it's hot out there. Lights are bright.
Lights have been bright your whole life. Howie Long, Hall of Famer. Love having you on.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
15 years in the NFL, six-time Pro Bowler and a Hall of Famer, Jason Taylor is joining us. Brother of Joy Taylor is joining us. She tells me all these great stories all the time. You did not have, or maybe you did have, the typical route to the NFL. You had a lot of doubters, a lot of questions. People said no. When you look back at your NFL experience, does it feel common or uncommon?
I feel like it was uncommon. I mean, I was doubted, undersized. You know, back when I came out in 97, I'm going to date myself a little bit here. You know, I was 6'5", 6'6", 240 pounds. And in the NFL, you were a tweener. It was kind of a bad word.
That's right.
It was a derogatory term. And people didn't know where you fit or whatnot. Nowadays, they call them hybrids. They pay them $20 million a year. Everybody wants them. You can't find them. But I was a little bit too – so on my mother's birthday today, she had me a little bit too early, but it worked out.
It's so absolutely true.
It's crazy.
You're what everybody is looking for now. And if you can't play defense, they make you a tight end.
You're right.
$20 million
they don't have to block anymore either. You just split out, run the seam. It's easy.
Let's talk about Jimmy Johnson's influence on your life. He was just inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, Jimmy means everything to me. I mean, he's a guy that took a chance on a 240-pounder playing defensive end. He was very confident and put me in a situation and said, listen, don't worry about learning football right now. Just go find the football and go do it. So I think the belief that he put in me and the confidence he instilled in me gave me an opportunity to just run around, and I learned the game as I went. But, you know, he's the way he thinks. You know, he's a philosophy major. And the way he thinks, so outside of the box, so different than what other people in the league at that particular time. And I think even nowadays, so differently than they really think. And it instills that confidence. It instills that bravado in you that you can do it. Because if he believes in me, I know I can do it.
Did you feel a responsibility to be good for Jimmy? Because he took a chance on you.
Yeah, you feel responsibility, but you also feel that pressure and that heat on the back of your neck, much like this Miami Heat right now.
Right.
But, you know, Jimmy was demanding. And he worked the heck out of you. He pushed you. He wanted to make practice so difficult that the games felt easy. And I never understood that when he first was saying it. And then after going through one training camp with him, I realized he's exactly right. Like, we're going to work so hard that we can't wait to get to Sunday. And that's what I need. Listen, if I was a first-round pick in 97 in Miami, I might have been a mess-up. You know, down here on the beach, getting in trouble, who knows what. But coming in as a third-round pick, having a huge chip on my shoulder, having a coach that believed in me and made me push and grind, I mean, I think is really what made me a pretty good player.
What's it like to play in Miami?
Really good. Really good. I mean, depending on the time of year, it's really hot, but it's really good. I mean, this is a great city. I mean, they love the Dolphins down here as much as they're behind the Heat, and obviously has some great years with LeBron and D-Wade and those guys and Chris Bosh here at the Heat. You know, this is a football town that's thirsty for a championship. You know, unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to win one, but the culture is amazing here. It's a melting pot, and there's a lot of places like this around the country, but I think Miami is so unique in that it's such a vacation spot, destination for people, and the Hispanic culture, black, white, Jewish, I mean, they're all in really a small footprint, you know, as far as square footage, square miles, and it's I love it. I mean, it's an amazing city.
It tests you as a player, though. It tested your discipline.
It does. The only good thing is that we used to practice in Davie, Florida. So it's about 30 minutes away from here. So I lived about 10 minutes from the facility, and the beach was about a half hour away. So it's close enough you can get to it, but far enough away that you still, okay, at 4:30 in the morning, I got to leave because I have to be at practice by 6. Like, it still gets you out of here. I know it sounds crazy leaving at 4:30, but you know, it's far enough away, and I had great veterans around me, guys like Trace Armstrong and Tim Bowens and Zach Thomas, so many guys that did it the right way. that kind of showed you the route to go, that kept you out of trouble a little bit.
You played on very good defensive fronts, which you were often the star or the star. You got to an AFC championship with the Jets, not a Super Bowl. San Francisco's got a very athletic defensive front. They've drafted, I mean, they're all under 25 and they've drafted it. When you feel like you went into games knowing I'm better than the offensive tackle I line up against, San Francisco gets into several games like that. Did you know it going into the game on tape, or did you sense it after 12, 15 snaps?
Both, really. You kind of, you know, going in, okay, I think we match up well. If we can get certain things to happen throughout the course of the game and get a lead, maybe a two-possession lead, I know I'll dominate the guy across
you from me. You can tell on film.
Yeah, I mean, you know when you match up well, what you like to do against what they like to do. You know, you figure out snap counts, you figure out tendencies. Some quarterbacks like to take the play clock very, very low, so now I can get a jump off the ball when there's 1 or 2 seconds left on the play clock. So you look at all those things. Now, when you come out in the first quarter, and I tell everybody that plays nowadays, even the kids I coach now, everybody's fresh in the first quarter. I mean, they just had the national anthem. There's a flyover. The cheerleaders are doing backflips. Everybody's happy. Everybody's fresh. So you get those guys that want to do a little extra and play a little dirty and push and shove you after the play, and I used to just turn around and laugh. Say, you're fresh now, but I'm going to see you in about an hour and a half when that sun's been on your neck for 2 hours, and then I know I'm going to get you.
By the way, I saw the Steelers throwing up a couple years ago. Mike Tomlin brought a team down here.
Yep.
Could you see teams in Miami wilt? You saw them wilt.
Absolutely. And we would sit in the sideline and laugh about it. Now, remember, my first 8 years, especially under Jimmy Johnson and Dave Wannstedt, we had no indoor facility. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, all those practices and walkthroughs were outside. So we were always in the elements. We always had to deal with it. So we were hell on wheels in September and October. Now, November, December came around, and those miles started adding up a little bit, and we sometimes ran out of gas. But, yeah, you could see those guys melting. We had guys, offensive linemen, come back on the field for a new series, still have an ice towel around their neck, try to tuck it in their shoulder pads, and the refs would run over and make them pull it out. And as soon as you see that, I mean, it's like a single foul line trying to line up and play against that guy because you know I got one now.
You're a coach now. What have you taken from Jimmy Johnson to be a great high school coach? Is there a message or something you learned from Jimmy?
Yeah, I think the work ethic. There's a few coaches I take things from. Probably, you know, Jimmy Johnson, Nick Saban, a guy I played for a couple years, and obviously his resume speaks for himself, a guy I love dearly. Kirby Smart. There's a bunch of guys that I played for, Rex Ryan. But, you know, Jimmy was a stickler for details. We were always going to work. You're going to outwork everybody when you're on the grass. Listen, let's have a great time. We're going to have fun out here. This game is about having fun. But when you're on the grass, we need to be the hardest workers in the room. And then I always tell my D lineman now, and I was always that way as a player, I want to get kicked out of practice every day. I want to ruin every drill to the point where Dan Marino's yelling at me, Jimmy Johnson or Nick Saban or whoever it is kicks us out of practice because they can't get anything done. Because the D-line's being a pain in the butt. And when you do that enough, then Sunday comes easy and you just go out and do your thing.
Was he a good brother, Joy?
He's a great brother. He's very hard on me, as he should have been.
You wouldn't let her
and
have
I
a tequila shot with Michael Jordan. Why?
She was underage.
No, I wasn't. I was there for my 21st birthday.
That is...
No, you know what?
I love it. As a brother, I love that.
I was looking out... You know why? Because I wanted 2 shots, and if she took one, then I could only have one. That's the truth behind it.
Jason, rightfully so. I mean, I went to school in Miami here, was trying to keep an eye on me at all times, which I needed. I probably needed a couple eyes on me. But, you know, he's always hard on me, but I needed it.
She's a real pro. Brother. She's very disciplined. Were you disciplined?
Who's disciplined?
She's very disciplined as a worker.
Oh, yeah. No, she'll work. Yeah, she's a worker.
What's the qualifier there?
I never... You know, you say Joy Taylor, the first 10 things that come to mind may not be discipline. But
haven't worked together.
I see her in a different light. I've seen her in her worst of times and when she's not working. But no, she's worked her butt off. I mean, the route she took to get to where she is, you know, from being an intern and assistant producer, I don't even know all the titles she had, but she's getting up at 4:35 in the morning. She earned it. And we're finally at the point now that if we go to dinner, she could pay for it.
There we go.
Not this weekend, but yes. Sometimes.
Jason Taylor and Joy Taylor, thank you so much, Jason. Jace.
Thank
the
you.
Hall of Famer. Great seeing you.
Happy birthday,
He'll be on Joy's podcast later today, The Herd.